It's Tuesday, August 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the parents of a fallen U.S. soldier visit our studios amid the latest Donald Trump controversy.
Almost about 300,000 Syrians have been killed, and about half of the population of 19 million people have become displaced.
Casualties mount in Syria amid an apparent blow to Islamic State. Also ahead, financial markets remain up, and it's the day to pull out your crayons and markers. It's all on today's International Edition. A political feud that has consumed the U.S. media in the past few days, a feud between Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and the Muslim American parents of a fallen U.S. soldier. Could it be coming to an end? Kaiser and Ghazala Khan are actually here in our VOA studios today, and they spoke with VOA's Urdu service. Their feud with Trump has been raging since they appeared at the Democratic National Convention last Thursday, when Kaiser Khan criticized Trump's position on immigration and accused him of never having made a sacrifice. Trump responded by questioning whether Ghazala Khan was silent at the DNC podium because of her religion, and insisting that he had made sacrifices during his business career. The Khans and Trump have been trading accusations and insults ever since, but that appeared to come to an end Monday, and International Edition's Michael Lippin is here to tell us why. Michael?
Hi, Jim. Thank you. Well, Trump made his first public appearance today since the dispute erupted, speaking to supporters in Columbus, Ohio, and even taking a few questions from them. But he did not say anything about that feud with the Khans, whose son was killed while serving with the U.S. military in Iraq in 2004. Trump did reiterate his pledge to combat terrorism, which he has said is the real problem that caused the death of Captain Humayun Khan.
We're also going to stop radical Islamic terrorism. We're not letting the people come in. We're not letting them come in. And they can play all the games they want, but we're not. You know, Hillary Clinton wants a 550% increase from Syria coming into this country over Obama. And you'd actually say, what is she doing?
Well, as you mentioned, Jim, the Khans were at VOA today, and Urdu service reporter Mohammed Atif spoke with them. Atif asked Kaiser Khan whether he agrees with Trump that it was Muslim extremism that killed his son.
Of course it was. We reject violence. We have paid the price like other Muslims in the world. Pakistan has had the most casualties of the Muslims by the hands of terror. We reject terror at all levels. Therefore, the assertions that are being made that the Muslim terrorist and all, if I may be so blunt, is that there is no place of terror in Islam. The name of the Islam had been maligned by the people that do not like Islam. Islam is a religion of peace. There is no place for what is taking place. Most casualty in the terrorist attacks in the world are Muslims, innocent Muslims. Where in the God's earth is written that you can kill an innocent person and say this is being done in the name of Islam? This is not. We have co-mingled the terms and the terminologies. That violence, the violence in the world that is being conducted, that these are Muslims, these are Islamic concept, not at all.
As you said, Muslims are being targeted in this violence and extremism. They have paid with their lives. How does your son's death open a broader discussion on extremism?
Well, his passing sheds light on the capacity of human being to be beyond us and them. He was responsible for lots of human beings, let's call them human beings. Inside, there were hundreds of soldiers. Outside, there were approximately 300 Muslim Iraqis, locals, that were coming into the camp. When the terrorists came, he extended his hand. He ordered his men to hit the ground. He had the option to hit the ground himself. 300 Iraqis were at the gate. The gate was the target, and the wall on the other side was the target. He took 10 steps towards the oncoming danger, oncoming terrorists, with extended hand trying to stop it, fully realizing the consequences. As a military, trained military officer, he knew what the danger was. Otherwise, he would have not ordered the men to hit the ground. That is the message of Islam. That is the message of peace. Looking after others, not killing them, not killing innocent children. Remember, Pakistan still grieves what took place in Peshawar. Well, children were killed. Is that Islam? Is that has anything to do with my religion? Not at all. I very clearly say this. Let's put our terminologies in right perspective. Let's call them, these are criminals. These are criminals of this world, and we ought to reject them, we ought to hunt them, we ought to eliminate them. And I very strongly salute the people that are fighting that terrorism, and that is the Army of Pakistan.
Do you expect anything positive to come out after the showdown between you and Donald Trump?
It really has come out. It really, really has come out that a significant larger number of Republicans are asking him to tone down, change those derogatory remarks about minorities, not only just the Muslim, but other minorities, women, judges, the legal system of this country. And he is doing that. So the effect has already been. Is there a burden, some burden on us back and forth and all that? We keep ourselves above that. Of course, when you take a moral stand, there is a burden that you must be ready to bear it. So we are ready to bear that. Before participating in the convention, we, as a family, we sat down, we talked about it. Should we do that as a Muslim? And we decided that whatever the burden will come, we will be together, we will bear it, and we will move forward.
Now, I'd just like to point out that the Khans are of Pakistani origin. These were the first media remarks made by them, and they've done quite a few interviews in the past few days in which they have refrained from verbally attacking Trump. And as you heard, Khizr Khan even gave Trump credit for toning down the rhetoric. I also thought it was noteworthy that Khizr Khan acknowledged the burden that he and his wife took on by getting into the spotlight last week. While they've received a lot of sympathy and support here in the U.S., they've also attracted criticism from Trump supporters who took issue with the tone and substance of Khizr Khan's accusations against Trump. One other noteworthy development today was a talk by President Barack Obama to a National Convention of Disabled American Veterans. Obama didn't mention Trump's feud with the Khans, but he did have strong praise for Gold Star families who are given that name because they have lost a family member serving in the U.S. military.
Our Gold Star families have made a sacrifice that most of us cannot even begin to imagine. They represent the very best of our country. They continue to inspire us every day, every moment. They serve as a powerful reminder of the true strength of America. And we have to do everything we can for those families and honor them and be humbled by them.
And that was President Obama. Back to you, Jim.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. You can find more about the visit of the Khans to VOA on our website at voanews.com. It's time for us now to check out what's buzzing online with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Let's stay with our top story. What's the latest on Trump's comments about Gazela Khan?
So there is a new trending hashtag. Muslim women around the world are using hashtag Can You Hear Us Now to protest Trump's comment that Gazela Khan was maybe not allowed to speak at the DNC. It started out with the Council on American Islamic Relations asking women to use the hashtag after Trump insinuated the mother of a slain soldier wasn't allowed to speak at the convention where her husband spoke.
Well, that seems to be a play on the words from Khan's op-ed in the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the tweets that are using the hashtag.
Sure, and you're right. Her op-ed was titled, "Trump Criticized My Silence. He Knows Nothing About True Sacrifice." Basically, she wrote, "Everyone around the world except Trump felt her pain without her saying a word." Moving on to the tweets, many renowned Muslim women use the hashtag. Here's one from Dalia Mogahit, whose handle is at dmogahit. She tweeted, "Muslim women not allowed to speak? I give a TED Talks and got a standing ovation. Hashtag, can you hear us now?" Now, during the TED Talks, the Muslim scholar actually spoke about the negative perceptions of her faith in the media and asked the audience to choose empathy over prejudice. A medical doctor named Allah Murabid tweeted, "Hey D, I spend my time creating solutions with presidents and the like. In brackets, so I guess we'll never meet." She also tagged a photo of herself speaking with former President Jimmy Carter. But it's not just well-known academics using this hashtag. A woman named Malika tweeted, "Please don't project what goes on in your own household onto us," and tagged Donald Trump in the tweet.
And, of course, we want to hear from both sides of the story. What Absolutely. Is Donald Trump saying about all this on social media?
He sent out a couple of tweets about Mr. Khan, and here's one. "This story is not about Mr. Khan, who is all over the place doing interviews, but rather radical Islamic terrorism and the U.S. Get smart." Trump also argued CNN, which featured its interview with the Gold Star father quite prominently over the weekend, will lose all credibility if they continue to be the quote-unquote press shop for his rival Hillary Clinton. That's all for me today, Jim.
Thanks for the great wrap-up, G. And you may tweet us your comments and questions to our Twitter stream. That's at VOA underscore IE. Myself and G are on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Afghan forces declare Eastern District free of Islamic State. New security laws launched in Malaysia. North Korean defector waits for freedom. Taiwan's president apologizes to indigenous community. Fearing secret trial, activists' friends protest China court. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on the VOAnews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. In Syria, U.S.-backed Kurdish and Arab fighters say they have taken nearly half of the Islamic State-held town of Manbij near the Turkish border. Ohio State University regional analyst Alam Payand tells VOA's Victor Beatty the fall of Manbij would be a major blow to Islamic State efforts to bring in more fighters and supplies from Turkey.
Any interruption for either the personnel or the vehicles or equipment or supplies, so it's a successful operation.
Apparently there's a bit of terrible civilian loss. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights suggests that U.S. airstrikes may have resulted in some civilian casualties. Tens of thousands have led the fighting.
Especially the aerial bombardments, in many cases there are the civilian casualties on both sides. And when you look at the casualty levels, almost about 300,000 Syrians have been killed, and about half of the population of 19 million people have become displaced and refugees, either externally or internally. It's a very, very, very high cost that they have been. Almost it's very close to what happened in Afghanistan during the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan from 1979 to 1989, which is almost in numbers, it's almost, well, the Afghan war was much longer than this. But still, in the same period of time, I think there's a loss of human life. There is no question about that.
Well, speaking of civilian suffering, there are reports of renewed fighting in Aleppo. Syrian rebel fighters led by the Islamist group Jabhat Fateh al-Sham, the former al-Qaeda-linked Nusra Front, the Ahrar al-Sham, said they've taken over army positions in the southwestern government-held parts of Aleppo. It seemed like the rebels were on their way out to defeat in Aleppo. Now they're trying to turn things. Is this an act of desperation?
Yes. I would say so. They're not very close to being really dismantled. But whenever there is a pressure building on them, so they are going to resort to many other kinds of terrorism.
The last round of Syria peace talks broke up in April when the opposition delegate quit after accusing government forces of violating a cessation of hostilities. U.S. financial markets remain at or near all-time highs amid light trading. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us now from New York, where we are assessing the just completed month. And you know what? July turned out to be a strong month for investors.
It was quite a month, and we are actually counting down to the national election, which is just 99 days away, so it's going to get really exciting for the markets at this point. But to quickly recap how we ended July, this was a month that proved to be historic for the U.S. markets. Stocks finished last week closing off intraday all-time highs for the S&P 500, managing to rally despite a softer-than-expected GDP reading for Q4 and disappointment from the Bank of Japan on Thursday night. For the week, however, the S&P and Dow posted gains of around 3%, while the NASDAQ jumped over 7% because we saw that rebound in tech stocks following earnings.
A big story out there is crude oil, and it is dropping below $40 a barrel. Why is that happening?
Yeah, well, July actually saw its biggest monthly decline in a year. In fact, crude oil is down over 15% for 2016. And really, the reason is we see a rise in OPEC production, and U.S. oil rig additions continue to weigh on the market. So just exactly what we were talking about in the beginning of the year with the oil supply glut, more production and increasing rig counts is the same thing that we're seeing now, even though analysts expected a rebound to $50 to $60 in the back half of the year. It's basic supply and demand. It's nothing sexier than that. There is way too much supply in the system. The summer demand season is proving to be a bust, and we just can't get this oil out of the system. And you know, there's just production galore here.
You mentioned 99 days until the election. How are traders viewing the candidates as we're moving along?
You know, what's really interesting is that we always say, I sound like a broken record, markets don't like uncertainty. And the more I say that, we're seeing markets continue to move higher to all-time historic highs. We are still trying to figure out what Brexit is going to be. We still don't know when interest rates are going to rise. And the next wild card is clearly the election. We're just under 100 days to go. And right now, it's really hard to tell what stocks are going to be hot and what's going to be not, because policy is still pretty unclear in both camps. Typically, markets do well in an election year. So right now, it's really anyone's game. As it gets closer, I'll be able to discern what stocks should be doing better. For example, Trump wants to increase defensive spending, and Clinton does to a certain extent as well. So you would see stocks like Northrop Grumman, Boeing, they would do well. One area of concern, Clinton wants to investigate healthcare pricing and practices. So I'd be careful in that sector. But right now, there's still a lot of ifs, ands, and buts out there. But that really will be the hot topic in the markets as we get closer.
We've mentioned it before, but it is a truth that holds true. Certainty for investors is in great information from Jill Malandrino in New York. Jill, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
And we invite you to stop by our website, voanews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
VOA's International Edition. Yes, there is such a thing as National Coloring Book Day, and it's held annually on August 2nd. It's become an increasingly popular celebration along with the rise of adult coloring books, which have skyrocketed in popularity. Faith Lapidus narrates this report by Faiza El-Masri.
Trina Lucido creates coloring books, and her inspirations are all around her.
One day I saw a beautiful leaf, and boom, I did a whole page with leaves. So some came from sketchbooks, and some were just a one-word inspiration. Some I just saw something on the ground, and that was my inspiration that day.
Her latest is called Color, Write, and Create, a coloring journal. It contains 40 pages of hand-sketched drawings and lines to write on.
The idea behind this book, the big idea, was to encourage people to be creative. Something else that I've heard from people, that they're buying these for people who are either ill or going through a rough time, and they feel this is something that kind of will just sort of help them almost therapeutically.
Adult coloring books are big business. In December, 5 of the top 10 best-selling books in the U.S. were coloring books. Color, Write, and Create is the latest addition to Lucido's product line that started 20 years ago with handmade greeting cards.
It's a diary and a sketchbook all in one. It's called an art journal.
Over the years, she's created a variety of collectibles made of paper, fabric, and antique materials. Lucido's adult coloring books are also available in local stores where grown-ups were more than happy to sit down and go to work.
Is very relaxing. Any stress just sort of falls away. It frees your mind. I love her little birds. There's just something about them that they make me smile. So I'm saving the bird pictures till the very end, I think.
For now, there is strong demand for adult coloring books, and that keeps Lucido happy and busy. For writer Faiza El Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And we thank you for coloring a little bit of your world each and every day with International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, on Facebook at VOA Now, and also on Twitter. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late July, Secretary of State John Kerry and the foreign ministers of Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Myanmar, and Vietnam met in Vientiane, Laos, for the 9th Lower Mekong Initiative Ministerial Meeting. The Lower Mekong Initiative, or LMI, was launched in 2009 to narrow the development gap between the five Lower Mekong countries. The initiative focuses on six areas: agriculture and food security, connectivity, education, energy security, environment and water, and health, as well as issues related to improving gender equality. As Secretary Kerry has said, at the heart of the Lower Mekong Initiative is one concept, sustainability. This is particularly important today, as the entire region suffers through the worst drought in nearly a century. According to the U.S. Geologic Survey's chief scientist for climate and land use change, the Mekong region is among the most seriously imperiled regions on the planet. It will almost certainly see more intense dry seasons, wetter monsoons, floods, storms, and rising sea levels. We need to heed these warnings and act accordingly, Secretary Kerry said. Since we began this project, we have explored ways to cooperate, to share information, and address the full range of water, energy, and food security challenges that we face. Responding to these continued challenges, this year the LMI ministers meeting in Vientiane formally launched a sustainable infrastructure partnership to improve regional infrastructure planning and performance while mitigating environmental impacts. The Mekong River is the economic lifeblood of the entire region, and it helps to enrich lives, it pays the bills, fills the stomachs of more than 70 million people. It's also a priceless center of biodiversity, Secretary Kerry said. We have learned that wherever we have a fragile ecosystem supporting a regional economy, you need a strategy that nurtures the health of both, and you require all of the regional components of that ecosystem to share in responsibility.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.